It's time!
You're listening to Pound for Pound, ringside for all things MMA and boxing on WFUV Sports. Welcome back to another episode of Pound for Pound. I'm your host, once again for this week, Andrew Canary, alongside Zach Cordova and Mahdi Dembele. We got Joe Henry producing this episode. Guys, it was a bit of a slow week last week, you know, not a ton of stuff happening in the UFC world, but despite that, we do have some announcements to talk about, some kind of weird happenings during last week's event. So before we get into all that, how are you guys doing?
Doing good, man. You know, spring break is starting to get a little bit of warmer weather, you know, we're starting to get a little of those summer vibes. I'm in Texas right now anyways, and it's warm down here. I don't know if it's warm for you guys down in New York right now, but I'm getting excited, you know. UFC 300 is just creeping up every week by week, and I'm just getting more and more excited. So definitely doing good right now. How are you guys?
I mean, you're down in Texas. You're doing better than me. I've been able to catch some sleep, but always glad to come back and talk cage with you too.
Yeah, no, I'm a little jealous, Zach. I mean, right now I think it is, 47. Yeah, drizzling outside. So definitely, you know, not the best, but, you know, I was still happy to talk some cage with you guys, as always. So to start this episode off, I thought we would just get into the last fight night that happened, recap a little bit of the event. I want to talk about this main event first. Rose Namajunas getting a 5-round decision over Amanda Ribas. It was a really impressive win, a return to form. Definitely not, I would say, you know, a kind of a world beater performance out of Namajunas, but she did what she needed to do. I was really impressed with the performance. So off the back of that, I just kind of want your guys' general takes. Do you think that Namajunas can start to maybe make a run at this flyweight title picture? Or do you think that this is kind of, you know, maybe one of the, you know, the height that she can reach in this division?
I agree with you, man. I mean, in terms of she did what she needed to do, and it wasn't necessarily, I'd say, the flashiest performance, or she didn't really make a huge statement, I feel like, with the win that she kind of needed to if she wants to enter that title picture. But she definitely kind of showed people that she's still Rose Namajunas and she could still compete with the best of them. I just feel like she outworked Amanda Ribas in that matchup, and I think that's what it came down to in the 5-round decision, was the 5-round experience for Rose. And I mean, just like I said, just to repeat myself, she just outworked her and for 5 rounds. And if she wants to keep that going, she's going to have to fight opponents that are a little bit bigger than her. She had that last matchup with Fiore, which we're about to get into pretty soon. But Fiore just looked bigger than her in that fight, and Rose had a lot of problems trying to take her down, and just seemed the size seemed to bother her. So if she wants to make her presence known in this division, I think she's got a lot to overcome in that aspect. But I think this is definitely a good start for her if she wants to try to make that run for another title in another weight class.
I mean, Zach, I could have said it better myself. I mean, it's new beginnings. It's a fresh start. It's a tale of two different cities. In past times, I felt a little bit worse about Rose Namajunas, especially in her older division. I didn't really think that she had the, let's say, juice to get it done once again. But she moved up. She's in a new division. Everybody had questions, particularly after the first fight. I think you could start to feel better after the second one. And she did it in a way where it was scrappy almost. She scrapped till the end. You're usually witnessing the more finesse kind of Rose Namajunas. Last week, we were all confused. Like, what is Rose going to come here and do? And she went out there and she got a win against a very, very good fighter with a deep fight resume in Amanda Ribas. So I have nothing more to say. I mean, it's a good win. It's a good step in the right direction. And maybe she can make some noise in her new home, in that new division, and maybe silence the haters and get rid of that question mark.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, it was an impressive performance by her. And right now she is sitting at the seventh rank in that flyweight division. So off the back of that, I kind of want to ask you guys, do you see any potential future matchups for Rose in this division? Because obviously this weekend we have Erin Blanchfield versus Manon Fiorot in the main event. So that'll be kind of a decider for the next contender for the flyweight belt. But in the meantime, do you think Nama Yunus can maybe get a fight scheduled against maybe rank number 6, 5, 4, maybe an interesting fight that could, boost her up the rankings and possibly get her a title shot and put her in contention with Blanchfield and Fiora. Do you guys have any ideas?
I know Macy Barber just had a fight,
Oh
and
my
I know
God, you
Rose just
spoke.
had a fight. So I think that's it. I think that's the fight to make. I know it's probably the most popular one. I know, Body, you just chucked in a little bit. I think that's the popular take on it. I think Rose Namajunas versus Macy Barber is the next fight you got to make. I think their styles make for a pretty interesting matchup and kind of almost like a backup number one contender fight to this Fiorot Blanchfield fight that's this weekend, kind of like maybe if you want to call it a number two contender fight. I think those two are definitely kind of next up waiting in line in that division. So I think those two, that's what's next for both of them. I think they're kind of on each other's radar right now. So I'd love to see that matchup in the future.
I was
Yeah.
also going to say Macy Barber, who's currently ranked, I want to say number four in the division. I think a rematch against Manon Fiorot is a bit too early. I see that somewhere down the line. Maybe that could be the big exclamation point. But right now, I'm staring two holes through Jessica Andrade, right? She just looks scary. She has 10 wins by knockout, 8 by submission, and 11 finishes in the first round. A spotty record in recent times, but she's also coming off a win against, I want to say it's Amanda Dern. I want to say it's Dern, yes, of last year, late last year. I think if she could get it done against a fighter like that, who's like a real, I would say like not mitigator, that's not the current, like gatekeeper almost in that division, I think that would be a huge win. Or she could just slide one slot down. Caitlin Cerminara is right there as well. She could jump up from 7 to 6 or from 5 to 7 with any one of those two. I'm leaning towards a jump up to 5 with the win against Jessica Andrade.
Yeah, I mean, I think any of those matchups are good. I mean, obviously, you want to fight people higher up in the rankings. If I do remember correctly, I think Andrade does have a fight scheduled. I'm not positive. Let me check. Yeah, it's against Marina Rodriguez at UFC 100. But potentially, if that fight falls through, I could find Namajunas fitting into that slot perfectly. I mean, that could be an interesting late notice replacement, but either way, though, big win for Namajunas and a couple of interesting potential matchups. But before we kind of talk or stop talking about this past UFC event, we have to bring up the big news. And I know I saw Zach texting about it in our group chat last at the beginning of last week. The bite of the night. So, I mean, a tattoo and a 50K bonus. I don't even know where to start with this one, guys. It was against it was. Yeah, I'm trying to look at the fight that it happened with. It was, yeah, it was, yeah, Igor Da Silva versus Andre Lima. Both of these fighters were undefeated heading into this fight. And in the second round, I was actually watching this fight with my parents, in our family room. And we were talking
Oh,
just
what a
like,
way, what a way to introduce the family to some cage. Just
oh yeah.
sit around the fire, watching some fights, and the other guy takes a chunk out. Not a chunk, but decides to just take a bite out of the guy he's fighting against.
Oh, I
Trying
know.
to explain to my mom that that's usually not what happens. So
That's
I
literally
totally
what I
get
had
you
to
on that
do.
front.
It was ridiculous. Like they entered the clinch and I was trying to explain like how he's trying to like break the hands and everything. And then the ref stopped it and I was like, "What's going on?" And then he shows the bite mark and I was like, "No way he actually just bit him." That's
Deep imprint,
insane.
super deep imprint.
So
Forbidden
obviously
technique.
yeah, crazy technique. So off the back of that, the fight obviously gets canceled when it's confirmed that yeah, he did bite him. And then after that, Andre Lima goes out and gets a tattoo of the exact bite mark, which you could clearly see in camera. And he got 50K from Dana White. On top of that, also, the guy who bit him, Igor Da Silva, cut from the UFC pretty much immediately. And also his purse is getting withheld by the Nevada State Athletic Commission.
Oh,
Yeah,
I
so
didn't
this
even know
is
that part. That's tough though, because it's you can't. I mean, I get for the reasons why they would do that. I Withholding the whole purse is crazy too, but you can't go into a fight, a regulated fight, and take a bite out of somebody. Like, I get why you would get frustrated when somebody is punching you in the face, but you're in a fight. Just punch him back in the face if you're frustrated, and don't bite the other guy. So, wow, that was a sight to see. But hearing that his purse is being withheld, I understand him getting cut immediately, but wow, it's just such a bad position to put yourself in. Like, why do it in the first place?
Fired without pay. That's a double whammy if I've ever heard one. to tell you the truth, I mean, Luis Severino, I mean, cool tattoo, first of all, for Andre Lima. I think it's a dope tattoo. Like, what a day for him. I mean, I know he said that he felt bad at like a couple of, because within the fight, you know, maybe something like Mike Tyson, Evander Holyfield. I don't know how much within the fight that was, but I kind of see almost in it, like almost like that. Like it was just so deep and visible, and you saw it was like, whoa, that's insane. Like he left a good imprint there, but it's like it sucks for a guy who's making, I believe he was making his debut. If you, I
He's
believe
making
so.
his debut fresh off the Contender Series. Yeah. And he tried to deny it too, though, is the crazy part. The ref goes up to him and goes, "Yeah, you bit him." And he goes, "No, I didn't."
The biggest like
like,
bite
your teeth
mark
are
like
on his
out of a
arm.
locker,
Yeah.
it's ridiculous. In the second round too.
And I don't think
Yeah,
he was
like
necessarily losing that. Like, I think he
yeah,
was
it was
close. Like, t
decent.
the tide was starting to turn towards him, I feel like, and just decided to take a chomp on the other dude's arm.
It's such a bizarre decision, because I agree with you. I think that he was probably on his way to kind of win that second round and potentially the fight overall. But it must have been in his mind that he felt like it was slipping away from him, because I'm trying to go through a thought process of like why you would decide to bite him. And I feel like you would have to think that you're losing in the fight to kind of go for broke and just try to bite him. But it's a ridiculous move. I've never seen that before. And we've seen people in the past get kind of like instantly cut from the UFC for a number of things. Like, I remember one time Paul Daly got cut from the UFC after he punched Josh Koscheck after the bell. But this is by far the most bizarre instant cuts I've ever seen. I mean, do you think that this guy will ever make it back to the UFC again, or do you think that's just, kind of that's it?
Oh, knowing Dana, that's a tough one because I mean there have been worse things done in the UFC, like absolutely worse things done. I remember one specific instance. I forget the two fighters, but one of the fighters gets a rival, like they were holding it in the Mohegan Sun Hotel, and the fighter go gets like a huge tattoo of like the other of a competitor's hotel, like on his back. I remember back in 2004, Wes Sims and Michael Kyle. I did some research. Sims accused Kyle of biting him. I don't think there was big penalty there. He was up and coming undefeated fighter, Luis Severino, really, really good. I know you could get frustrated. Again, the fight seemed to be turning the tide. I think they could review this and say maybe that was a bit too harsh, but I mean, perhaps, maybe. I think it's a possibility down the future.
I think it's a question too of the commission. Just that's on his record forever now. And it says literally on his record, DQ bite. And it's a question of whether a commission would even allow him to professionally compete in some states, because I know some states are harsher than others,
Oh my God.
California, in terms of some of the rules.
Oh.
And even New York is pretty tough on the rules. And
Yep.
having biting your opponent on your resume is a little tough. I mean, as a former biter myself, not saying recently, but apparently when I was a child, I used to get little trouble in the daycares for biting around a little bit. I know you can always bounce back from it, as a reformed human being. But for Severino, I mean, it's just so disappointing. Your debut in, I mean, I would say the Super Bowl of MMA promotions, and you're immediately cut for getting for biting. And it just to me, it feels like it's almost over. Like that was your chance, and you threw it away. And I just think it's a shame for him. It's really kind of sucks for him to go out like that, but he did it on his own accord, and that's it's really is has no one else to blame but himself.
Yeah, I mean, he made the decision himself, and he's definitely gonna have to live with it. But who knows? Maybe you should take a page out of Zach's book, reformed individual. Who knows? Maybe he can make his way back, or at least,
Biden,
Rookie
Biden is never
versus.
the way. It is never the way, I'll tell you that.
No,
See,
no.
that's the thing also. It's like Biden is now 0 for 2 in combat sports. Like, I don't know why the guy would do it again. It was literally 0 for 1. Mike Tyson is like
Yeah.
known for doing it and being clowned for it. So I don't know why he thought it was going to turn out any differently. But anyway, though, I do want to move our attention over to this upcoming UFC on ESPN card, headlined, like I said earlier, by Aaron Blanchfield versus Manon Fiorot. Should be a very, very interesting fight. But we have a couple other, exciting fights throughout this main card that I do want to touch on before we get to that. The first one is a middleweight bout, Chris Weidman versus Bruno Silva. And Chris Weidman has had pretty much as hard of a UFC career, I think, as anyone has ever had, from being UFC champion to completely snapping his leg in half and then going on this, pretty bad loss streak. He's trying to kind of make a comeback here, and I just know a lot of people from the community are doubting him. So I was wondering, are you guys doubting him as well? Do you think that he could potentially get a win here, or do you think we might see his retirement this weekend?
It's tough to say because he's had such a rigorous career through MMA where I don't want to say he is one of the toughest guys in MMA, and I don't want to doubt that he comes back for more after this. But at the same time, two wins in his last nine fights. I think he even broke his leg again in the last fight. I don't know if it was the other leg, but it just seems like a lot to kind of go through over and over again, especially he's 39 years old, guys, and I just don't know how much he has left in the tank after this. And I think he even mentioned it a little bit before, kind of talking about he was going to see how he felt going into this fight. And even mentioning this may be his potential last fight. And I always think that's a bad sign for a fighter going into, I mean, what could be a war. And I think when you're going in with the mindset that, okay, this could be it, maybe he goes out for a final hurrah and tries to give us one last glimpse of glory. But at the same time, I just don't think it's necessarily a good look to go in and say this is it for me, especially in the sport where you kind of have to have that mindset that where you always kind of got to be looking forward to push through your opponent and trying to you gotta have that kind of like killer's mindset to go through it. And I don't see him really continuing after this one, but I do hope he could give us one last good performance. But Bruno Silva, a finisher in himself, not really on the best streak lately. He's, I think, 1-4 in his last five. But Bruno Silva has shown glimpses where he's been really good in the UFC, where he's proven to be a pretty tough guy. He's one of two people to go to a decision with Alex Pereira, which I think is an absolute accomplishment in itself. So, and the other person who went to decision with Alex was I'm blanking on the name now, in light heavyweight, Polish Power. I can't remember the name now, but I just think that just proves to his durability to go through a full fight with Alex Pereira. Bruno Silva
Yeah.
to me is just a tough guy to get rid of, and I don't know if Weidman can really do it in his current state.
Yeah, Zach, really quickly, I think the name that was escaping you was Jan Błachowicz. That
Yeah,
first.
that is. Yep.
Chris Weidman, up and down career. I mean, you remember that big moment with him and Anderson Silva. That was probably the highlight of his career, but that's so far gone as of this point. I want to say that he's looking at his record, loss against Brad Tavares, loss against Uriah Hall. He has a win against Akhmedov, but then a loss against Dominic Reyes and Souza. And his last win before that was against Kelvin Gastelum. That's already back in July of 2017. Chris Weidman's one of my personal favorites, like New York kid, homegrown. I loved seeing him on the UFC 205 cards, on the Unstoppable card with John Jones. I thought he was fantastic. But yeah, I think regardless of the outcome, I think he's probably done at this point. 15-7 throughout his career. I mean, at that age, I don't really know where you go. Like, obviously, there's a time when everybody's a contender in the division, and then there's guys who are like closer to the end. They're just a good fight. I think he's even past that point where he's just a good fight. And Sosa's a guy on the come up who's like, he leaves nothing left in the cage. He leaves nothing left to be desired in the cage. When he gets in there, he'll put you down. So I don't really see much else left, especially in the stacked middleweight division. Not like it's like Chris Weidman doesn't have a place anymore, I would say. So yeah, I think regardless of the outcome, win or loss, I think he's good to call it a career.
Yeah, no, Madi, I agree with you, and I think you pretty put it pretty well there, is that there's not really a spot for him in this middleweight division, getting as stacked as it is. And it's funny to think that, because in one point in time, I mean, Chris Weidman was the best middleweight on the planet. Not, removing the whole Anderson Silva hype and everything like that. I mean, just genuinely looking at all of his, fights, rise to the UFC belt. He was, one of the most measured wrestlers, mixed in with some really great striking. And based on the way I'm talking about him, you could tell I'm a, huge fan, same as Mahdi. Yeah, it's hard to be a fan or not to be a fan of a New York grown US champion. So off the back of that, I really want to see him get a win this weekend. Especially considering his just long journey back to competition after breaking his leg as bad as he did. But I hate to say it, but I kind of agree with you guys. I think that he's just a little bit over the hump. His past couple fights haven't been fantastic. That Brad Tavares fight, it looked like he definitely had the will to kind of stick in there, the heart to stick in that fight, but definitely seemed like his technique just wasn't up to snuff. And if you're kind of lacking against a guy like Brad Tavares, it makes me feel like if you go up in this division or try to attempt to go up in this division, it's not going to go very well. So off the back of that, I think potentially he could get a win against Bruno Silva, who's, not the most fantastic person on the ground. But I think that if he lands a solid strike on Weidman, I mean, I think it could be over for the night. So for final picks, I mean, I guess I'm going with Silva. Mahdi, you're going with Silva, yes?
Yeah,
And then
sadly.
Zach.
I do gotta go with Silva, unfortunately. I am pulling for Weidman though. I hope you could give us one last one to
Yeah,
go out
definitely.
on. It's the saying, there's no happy endings in MMA, but you gotta hope for it. You gotta hope that he can get a win and ride off into the sunset off of a legendary career. But Chris Weidman will always be a legend, so win or lose, always have respect for him. But unfortunately, I am gonna pick Bruno Silva to beat win this one by knockout.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, we'll see how it pans out. I'm definitely going to be rooting for him this weekend, but I'm definitely going to be on the edge of my seat, a little worried. We'll see what happens. But moving on, this co-main event, very interesting fight in the welterweight division, Vicente Luque versus Joaquin Buckley. Joaquin Buckley, obviously, one of the biggest names. Well, actually, I don't know if biggest names in the UFC, but he definitely has one of the biggest clips in UFC history with that spinning viral kick. But he's going up against a tough test in Vicente Luque, who probably has one of the toughest chins I've ever seen in my life, regardless of division, regardless of weight class. He looks just through and through like a killer, and he's taken some really hard shots throughout his career, and kind of is touted as a guy that has that really kind of hard pressure style, where he'll take a bunch of shots and just keep coming forward, and you'll melt under the pressure. So off the back of that, who do you guys got on this fight, and what do you find interesting about it?
What I say is this: Vicente Luque has to go get Joaquin Phoenix. I mean, he has to be able to cut the ring off. I like Joaquin Phoenix a lot. I see him as like, I don't want to say the most exciting. He's the highlight in the UFC. I mean, the spinning back kick, that's probably like that plays in my head like a thousand times over. And he's someone who's really building himself a deep, deep resume. He's coming off of a two-fight win streak. And I believe his last loss before that was against Chris Curtis, who is a really good fighter who always brings it. I love Action Man. I love his style of fighting, and that's someone that I look at who almost mirrors Vicente Luque. That fight went to, I believe it was in round two. It was a knockout. And that was in December of 2022. What I'll say is this: I think, ooh, excuse the cars in the back. It's really hard to. There we go. Traffic there. I will say, I'll pull for Vicente Luque. I think Joaquin Phoenix really struggles with that style of fighting. I don't know how much he's improved enough to deal with that. So yeah, I like Vicente Luque for this fight.
I think you got the name mixed up a little bit there, Joaquin Buckley.
Walkley. Thank you.
Yeah, no worries though. No worries though. It's always you always
Always.
get a little mixed up nowadays, especially with all the Hollywood blockbusters coming out with Joaquin Phoenix. So I totally get it there. But Joaquin Buckley, since he's dropped to welterweight, has looked incredible, I think. And I think he's finally fighting at his natural weight class. I think he's not really having to overcome the height and reach differentials that he was fighting with at the higher weight class that he was at before, and I think he's now able to get inside and land his power shots more effectively without getting countered. And I think that's been a really big turning point for him in his style and his fight game, as he's continued to evolve. And I think that he's has no lack of confidence at this point in his career. I think he just continues to build off of each win. And I think in this matchup, he is the faster guy and he's the more powerful guy. And I think he's riding that wave of confidence into this one. And Vicente Luque, I feel like, has looked a little shaky recently. I think he got knocked out by Brad Tavares. And I feel like that kind of affected his confidence in ways where he's a little, I want to say, hesitant when he's fighting in the pocket. And I think in this matchup, he's going to really want to look towards his wrestling. And Buckley isn't a guy who is easy to take down, even at this smaller weight class. He is, I mean, just a tank. His build is unreal. The guy's physique is crazy. He's jacked as can be. And I think that strength is going to give Luque a lot of problems. And I don't think he's going to really be able to get him down to the ground. And I think if he's going to want to get into the ground and try to get that close, he's going to have to go into the fire. And going into the fire with Joaquin Buckley is not something really anybody wants to do. And I think that Buckley's going to be able to catch him in this matchup. I think that this is definitely a matchup that will favor Buckley in terms of those inside the pocket fights, especially when it comes to the power. And I think he's just one clean shot away from putting Luque down and ending this fight.
I definitely agree with you, Zach. I think that this is kind of a chin versus power matchup. But I will say, to that same extent, in the pocket, I've seen Joaquin Buckley get caught before pretty badly. Like, you want to pull up a fight, like Alessio Di Cerchio caught him with a head kick pretty clean. And also like a Kevin Holland was able to counter him pretty clean. And to your same extent, or to your point, you were talking how with this lighter weight class, he doesn't have to deal with length as much, and he doesn't have to put himself in those kind of precarious positions to land his big power shots. But off the back of that, though, I'm not super confident in his chin. And I think if it does get to a couple of exchanges, I think Luque is just going to hang in there a bit more than Buckley. Honestly, I think that he's just a tad bit overhyped. But I mean, we'll see how it plays out. I think that Luque has a slight edge, especially also if it gets to the ground. We'll wait to see if it actually does. But yeah, I think I'm going with Luque in this fight. So I guess we're a bit of disagreements here. So Zach, you're going for Buckley. I'm going for Luque. Madi, who are you going for?
Probably Luque.
Fair, fair. And also looking at the age too, pretty close. Luque 32, Buckley 29. I actually didn't realize Buckley was that young. So I mean, he still does have a lot in his UFC career. I feel like he's been in the UFC for such a long time. So I don't know. Maybe he has developed a lot, and maybe I'm just overlooking that. But
I
we'll
think
see.
you look at I think you look at a lot of higher weight class that he was at. I think that's what a lot of people judge him off of. And I think he was getting clipped a lot in those firefights because of the reach and height differentials. And I think at this lower weight class, I think he's finding those shots better and his game is just taking a step forward. But I also do see what you say, where he leaves himself open a lot when he's in the pocket fighting like that. So I wouldn't be shocked if Luque could find a shot to put him down. I think this fight is really, really close. I think even the odds makers have it at one minus 110 apiece. So a pick'em for you if you wanna if you're into that kind of stuff. But it's also another fight where I think this one ends in a finish. Over 2.5 rounds is set at a plus 130, which, the bookmakers are almost never wrong. So I definitely think it ends in a finish either way. But yeah, no, just to give a final pick, yeah, I think Buckley's able to get this one done. I think he's gonna continue his hot streak.
Fair.
Yeah, well, Marty, what were you going to say? Sorry.
Yeah, fair. That's absolutely fair.
Yeah, we'll definitely see how it plays out. I mean, one of us is going to be happy next week. One of us is going to be a little upset. We'll see how that pans out. But for this main event, I do want to get into it before we wrap up this episode. Erin Blomfield versus Manon Fiorot. Erin Blomfield has looked so good in her UFC performances, everything from her grappling to her ground striking. She just looks like a virtuoso and kind of like a version of Tatiana Suarez, just like kind of in another division. Which is a very scary prospect. But to that same extent, Manon Fiorot, I mean, we were just talking how she beat Rose Namajunas, one of the best to ever do it in the women's divisions. So off the back of that, I mean, this is a real top level contender matchup in this flyweight division. And you got to think whoever wins this fight is next in line for the belt once Shevchenko and Alexa Grasso end up, kind of settling their differences in that trilogy fight. So off the back of that, I mean, who do you think is going to win this fight, and who do you think is going to potentially get that next title shot?
This is a really good matchup. I think it's unstoppable force versus immovable object kind of.
Thank
Manon
you.
Fiorot has she's looked incredibly strong. She's looked incredibly hard to take down, I think, is the key to look at in this matchup. Rose Namajunas, as you were just mentioning, one of the best ever, was 0 for 6 on takedowns in her fight against Fiorot. And I think that's definitely going to be the challenge for Blanchfield, is finding a way to take her down, because I think that's her game, is the grappling. She just Blanchfield excels at that when she's on the ground. But I think the stand-up game has definitely evolved for her in recent fights, and I think she's finally piecing it all together. And it's so surprising to see what she's done, because she's still so young. I think Blanchfield's only like 24 years old, something like that. So the further, the more, the better she gets. I just think she still has so much left in the tank, so much potential left. And even if she doesn't get this one, she is definitely a future champ at some point. But this is a tough matchup to pick, just because of Fiorot. Her size and her strength has been a problem for a lot of other women in this division. And she likes to play like that outside rangy game, where she tries to pick her opponents apart with those big shots. And her last two fights have gone that way, have gone in her favor. And it's not just because of the matchup, it's because she's controlled it that way. She's that good to where she's made it into her kind of fight. But I don't think Blanchfield's going to give that to her. And 5-round fight, anything could happen. And I don't know, man. This is a tough one. Blanchfield
Wow.
is one of the most exciting contenders, I think, in all of the UFC. And if anyone deserves a title shot, it's her. And this fight is for that number one contender spot. So I'm definitely kind of excited for this one.
I mean, Zach, I gotta tell you, Zach and Andrew, I gotta tell you, this is probably one of the best fight night headliners that we had this year. I mean, both women 10 years apart, get that. I mean, Eric Blanchfield's only 24, Manon and Fiorot is 34. But if I could play devil's advocate for both, I mean, Erin Blanchfield, if we just look at her, 24, she has that big win against Talia Santos. I actually think that win is more impressive than Fiorot's win over Rose. She's coming off of nice finishes over Andrade and McCann. But Fiorot, like, if we just switch over to her side, she just beat a former champion at co-main event, obviously that being Rose. Like, it's like it's insane. Like, I don't even know who to pick. I'll do this. I like Manon Fiorot, because I think in her last couple of fights, she's looked, I don't want to say she's looked better, but the competition was more in which she was able to take down, right? Namajunas took, and May and May Mayra Bueno Silva, like fighters like that. It just convinces me that Manon Fiorot is like the sky's the limit for her. Even at 34 years old, she's 5'7", 5'8", big. You can't take her down. Her striking is efficient. Like, I just think as of right now, it's her time, but Erin Blanchfield's right behind her. Whether she wins or loses this fight, I think she's right there, and she's ready to take this division by storm. I actually think that they deserve the title shot right now. One of them should be fighting for the title over a Shevchenko.
I'm leaning more towards Manon Fiorot in this fight. I think that, yeah, I think something about her striking and just her physicality in this division, which, Zach, I think you highlighted perfectly, it sets her apart from the other flyweights that I've seen in this division. And I think that Erin Blanchfield is a really interesting matchup for her. I kind of agree with you. I don't know if necessarily the takedowns are going to be there for her. And if they aren't, I honestly don't think that she has any way of winning this fight, because I don't believe her striking is, all that great. Maybe you guys kind of want to, argue with me on that point, but I think that at the very least, Fiorot definitely has the edge in the striking. So yeah, off the back of that, I mean, I think that, yeah, just Fiorot has it. I will say though, very interesting stat. There is a decade age difference between the two. Blanchfield is 24, Fiorot is 34. So I don't know if that kind of plays any role in your decision making, but you could kind of view it as two different ways. Blanchfield is a kind of new fighter, has a lot of physicality to her, but also Hero has a lot of experience and, you know, lend that to takedown defense and everything like that. So there's a lot of interesting factors into this fight, going into this fight, but I think I'm going for Fiora. I don't know if you guys have any last words on this fight.
I think Blanchfield has been a bit underrated in terms of the striking. I know it hasn't been clean necessarily lately, but I do think she's continued to improve in that in that facet of her game. I think she's definitely gotten better, but I do think that early on in this fight, it's going to be frustrating for her because Furo is going to be able to kind of poke at her and outmaneuver her, use her speed and her size and just kind of pick her apart like she has some of her other opponents. But one thing that I have noticed about Furo is as she gets into a late second round, third round, she always seems to tire out. And I feel like her gas tank, especially in a 5-round fight, is a bit too suspect for me to say that she could beat an Erin Blanchfield who just seems to always be picking up steam in every round she's been in thus far in her career. And I think in a 5-round fight, it actually favors Blanchfield for that reason. I think she has the better cardio. I think her eventually, once Furoze tires out, she's going to be a little bit easier to take down. And all of a sudden that takedown defense, when it goes away from being exhausted, Blanchfield is going to be able to take her down and maybe even dominate her on the ground. She's just so good when she gets there. And if she can even find a sub later in the fight, I think that is completely possible. But I think even if it goes to a decision in a 5-round fight, I see this being favorable towards Blanchfield for that reason. I think she's got the better gas tank. I think once you get to those championship rounds, she's going to be the fresher fighter. And, you know, despite some early frustrations with Furo's size and speed and power, I just think Blanchfield's going to eventually find it. I think she's found it in every fight that she's been in. She's a tough and she's a gritty fighter that doesn't seem to give up on it. And once she gets to where she's best, which is the ground, she's always seemed to dominate. So I don't see it being any different in this fight. I think Furo poses a lot of new challenges for her, especially in the striking department. But when you're playing her game, which is the grappling game, I don't see Blanchfield being beaten in that aspect.
Zach, I got to say, you bring up a very, very interesting point. I checked the significant strikes going into this matchup, and it says that Erin Blanchfield actually lands more, 5.5 per round, as opposed to 4.71 for one man in Furio. If she wants to win this fight, I think she has to bring the pressure to her. You brought up Furio's cardio being the main concern for her not winning this fight. I kind of see this fight in two aspects, kind of like a Devin Haney and the Ryan Garcia. We obviously know that if Ryan Garcia doesn't turn this boxing match into a fight per se, Dev is going to box him up for 12 and the fight's going to be over. But if he's looking just to hurt him and bruise him and just catch him clean, Ryan Garcia has as good as a chance as anyone of knocking out Devin Haney. I feel like that's the same thing here. And just a size difference, of course. One is 5'3", the other one's like 5'7", 5'8". It's kind of like Roy Jones looking up at Rich Hall, ready to chop that tree down. I feel that energy coming from Erin Blanchfield. I feel like she has that in her. I'm a huge Furio guy. And I believe they're both on 5 fights, which, like, something ridiculous for both. Only one loss apiece to both fighters. I do think it's Manuel Furio's time, despite all of that, despite the cardio, despite the 10-year age difference. I mean, just getting better and better and better. And she beat a former world champ in her last fight. She put the world on notice. I think right now it's her time. But again, as I said before, Erin Blanchfield is not too far behind.
Yeah, no, we will definitely see. It is an interesting matchup. And I mean, I honestly, looking at this fight and just kind of the recent history with the flyweight division, I mean, you could kind of view this as like a shadow or dark horse champion of the division, based on how you want to view it, and how much you kind of respect Alexa Grasso and Valentina Shevchenko. But yeah, coming out of this, we'll definitely have a top contender, and it'll be an interesting fight, to say the very least. But moving on, there are a couple pieces of news that I do want to bring up to you guys and talk about a little bit before wrapping up this episode. One of those, the first Saudi Arabian card in Riyadh just got confirmed. Whitaker versus Chimaev is going to be headlining. Amazing matchup. I cannot wait. So I don't know if you guys got anything in terms of early picks or just previews. You could also just say how excited you are for the event. Just give me your
Oh.
general takes.
Oh man, dude, my mom heard me screaming in the other room when I opened up the reel that my friend sent me from Dana White. I can't even tell you how excited I am for this matchup to see a young prospect like Khamzat. I guess not even that young anymore, but a guy who has seemed to set the MMA world on fire, fighting against a guy like Robert Whittaker, who is just so good and still in his prime. Oh, this is the matchups you dream of. This is, I feel like, what we've been waiting for Khamzat since he's entered the UFC. And I don't want to even get into a pick yet or a breakdown. I just want to say I just see fireworks all over this fight. This is going to be amazing. I think it is definitely the number one contender fight for this division, right up after Izzy fights Du Plessis. Oh man, I can't even tell you how excited I am for this one. This is incredible.
It's a damn good fight, and boxing, please take notes. I mean, so much is on the line for both guys. It's not just like junk food, which is like just a good fight that you just throw out there, like Holloway Gaethje. But I mean, that fight has implications too, but this one has amazing implications. Khamzat Chimaev, I mean, he's looking to get back, right? This is a guy who showed up pretty much like 1 million pounds overweight when he was supposed to fight Nate Diaz, and he's lost a lot of fans. I mean, his fall was as quick as his rise, and he's a fighter that everybody loves to see. The dark macabre demeanor, 6 foot 2, 185, coming at everybody who fights in multiple divisions. I mean, and everybody loved to see him fight, but then he's kind of lost some of that with his obesity. So he's looking to get that back. And then you have Robert Whittaker. I mean, we talked about like second acts for guys. I mean, I feel like there's a second act for Robbie Whittaker, man. Like, I really, really do. I know we talked about it on the show in studio. I think guys are like 0-17. I forget the exact stat of being over the age of like 30, whatever it is, and retaining the belt. Maybe Robert Whittaker could change it, and this would be a big splash, defeating an undefeated young Khamzat Chimaev on your way back to the belt. So a lot on the line for both. It's good for the fans. I mean, I have no beef. This is just all around amazing. It's just a banger.
Yeah, a banger through and through. It definitely should be a very, very fun fight. And also, I mean, just what a debut in Saudi Arabia for their first card out there. Should be very cool. Also, though, Zach, you kind of mentioned Izzy versus Du Plessis, which hasn't been confirmed, but it is rumored to have or to take place at UFC 305 in Perth, which was just announced. Once again, the fight hasn't been announced, but I mean, it seems like it's going to be Izzy versus Du Plessis. Do you guys think that it's going to be that fight? Do you want to see that fight for 305? Or maybe do you want to see maybe a Volk versus Topuria rematch? Just give me very quick takes on that.
Almost feel like a Volk Topuria rematch wouldn't be fair to do in Australia since Volk just lost that belt to Topuria, and it almost feels like, unfortunately, it kind of feels like this is kind of Topuria's area. So I think that fight hopefully takes place in Spain for him, because I think it would be, it would be incredible for the fans over there. I think it would be such a nice event for kind of the welcoming of a new champion. But I'm not going to go and count Volk out just yet. I'm not going to get too into it right now, but I don't see that as a headliner for that for this event. I do think that Du Plessis Izzy is kind of the perfect headliner for it. I know I'm kind of talking about ushering new eras in, and Izzy just lost in Australia to Strickland, but this is both at their side of the world. Unfortunately, I don't think that fight's going to take place in Africa, which I think would also be an incredible crowd and an incredible card to do there. But I think them booking this fight right now in Perth with the Australian crowd and how incredible they've been in recent years, I think that's the main event to make there. Especially if Izzy's able to go out there and get that belt back, he's going to get an incredible reception down there from the I feel like kind of his home crowd from him fighting out in New Zealand. But oh man, I'm excited for that matchup. I think that is next in the middleweight division, unless they do want to maybe do a Strickland Du Plessis rematch, which doesn't really seem like is on Dana's mind right now. I think Israel Adesanya's comeback is very, very relevant to MMA, to the MMA world, and everyone wants to know what Izzy has next after that performance against Strickland. And man, I'm excited for that matchup. I am one of the biggest Izzy fans, so I'm ready for Israel Adesanya main event.
And I could attest to that. I mean, Zach, you convinced me that contender is just thinking back of, about his road to the belt the first time. I mean, it's so fun, and I can't wait to see him get back there. Yeah, I'm excited to see this fight at 305. I think of it almost like Spence Crawford. Like, I really don't want to hear anything else unless until this fight gets done. This fight, like, I feel like it should have been done already. Like, I need this fight, like, to happen. The buildup was perfect. Everything, the storyline, Africa would have been a fantastic crowd. Australia, Perth will do. But yeah, this fight needs to get done at 305. I mean, I can't think of a universe like Strickland and Du Plessis. I mean, yeah, I'm not a fan of it either. Not the immediate rematch too much. But yeah, this fight has been a long time coming for something. I believe Izzy had the belt still. Yeah, he had the belt when Dricus was yapping towards him. So yeah, I'd be like, you just have to get this done immediately.
Yeah, this fight has been a long time in the works. I mean, I think you have the perfect stage for it at, in Perth, UFC 305, all the biggest lights. You either schedule this fight here or you wait for like another big UFC card. But even then, I feel like if you hold it anywhere but Australia, it's not a great card or, not as big of a spot as it could be. But I think that'll do it for this episode of Pound for Pound. Make sure to watch the UFC fights this weekend and our recap episode the following week. Before I go, I want to give a huge thanks to my great co-hosts taking time out of their spring break, Mahdi Dembele, Zach Cordova, as well as our producer, Joe Henry. I've been Andrew Canary, and Pound for Pound is a production of WFUV Sports.